to converse and discuss all kinds of aspects of politics. Don't talk about politics out loud. Politics, religion, world events, and just plain local gossip. And if a person in the course of this conversation, which they made for their entertainment, felt like there was a particular interest that the conversation provoked or a particular issue of the day, that person was free to walk around and look at these niches and find the God that represented that particular issue or interest. And in order to be able to fix things for that day on a pretty temporary basis, the individual would take a little pinch of snuff and throw it on the altar fire in front of the God and worship the God in that way, and then walk away feeling vastly relieved, at least temporarily. Things like that don't last very long, as you probably know. At any rate, nothing to do with consumption on Paul's mind, but rather having to do with the ability to talk about this variety of religious expressions that he found in the Areopagus, or the marketplace. And that's why he begins his oration by saying to the Athenians, I notice that you're a very religious people. You have all these statues around. You must be religious. And then you can see his theological sophistication and his imagination working as he notices a niche with nothing in it. And there was an altar in front, but there's nothing there. And there, he says, is the altar to the unknown God. Quote, unquote, unknown God. And he realized the Athenians are covering every base. If they hadn't covered all the gods that were possible, given what people were interested in, what the issues were, they could go to that one, and they could sort of throw a pinch of snuff on the fire and feel better about something that they didn't know anything about at all to begin with. At any rate, Paul notices this, and since he wants to say something about his gospel of Jesus Christ, then he begins by talking about what he knows of the unknown God, because he says, I'm going to tell you about what you don't know about. And he begins his oration with a particular reference to what you would call the creation. And it goes something like this, and I'm quoting again from the reading which you heard previously. I found among you an altar to the inscription to an unknown God. What therefore you worship as unknown, this one I proclaim to you. The God who made the world, and everything in it, who is the Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by human hands, even this one, made by human hands, nor is he served by human hands like this. Since he himself gives to all mortals life and breath and all things, from one ancestor he made all nations to inhabit the whole earth. Pretty inclusive statement there by Paul in an ancient world. And allotted times and for their existence and the boundaries of all places where they could live, so they could search for God and perhaps go for him and find him. He believes that the Athenians, if they're actually going to be able to think more seriously about God, will probably best serve if they just look at the world around them. The beauty of the world around them in Athens and that part of the world, and looking at that beauty of the world, they'll be able to discern, or perhaps to use the term, grope to find the God that is unknown. So you look around him, you look around at creation, Paul would say, and you'll probably get some kind of a hint about the real God, capital G, not little g, the real God who made creation. And if you can see that in the world around you, then you'll take a big step to understanding who this unknown God is. I thought today a little bit about this sermon that Paul offers, which begins by looking at God as the creator of the world, and therefore worthy of the adoration and appreciation of all people, because all people can see beauty in nature and live by it and depend upon it. I thought about that in terms of this day, which you call here at St. Stephen's, Rogation Sunday. Rogation Sunday. complicated understanding we have right now about creation itself and what's happening to creation itself. Because if you're the slightest bit informed about what's going on in the world, you'll read about a huge ice cap in the Antarctic beginning to break off because things are warming up. You'll hear that there's some people are saying that the ozone layer that protects our Earth from the sun rays and the heat of the rays is breaking down, and therefore we're getting warmer. Remember last year, the drought? Could be again this next winter. We don't know about that. And I thought to myself, what a controversial subject, even in our time, something as elementary as what Paul tried to use with the Athenians, how controversial that is. Because the controversy has got to do with the fact that our climate seems to be changing. And somehow the creation that God has handed us and given to us for our care and our enjoyment and our very existence seems to be changing almost as we look on and watching it happen. And of course the controversy is not about the fact that climate is changing. The controversy is about what's causing that to happen. Now, there's a debate about that. There's a big debate about that. And some people will tell you that climate change has got nothing to do with human activity, that we're being told that because that's just a hoax that other people are placing on us. Other people, mostly people who are scientists, and I'm an engineer myself, so I learned about all this a long time ago, are saying that human beings have got something to do with all that, and therefore we should use our creativity to try and understand how we work against this kind of change, which is vastly threatening to everybody. Christians, Jews, Muslims, nobody around the world, we're all in this one together. Now, I should say that probably, being an engineer, I think a little bit about the scientific background to these theories about why it's changing, and I tend to agree that it's got something to do with us and what we are about. And that's a very difficult subject. I won't debate that any further, except that as an engineer, I tend to look at what the evidence is, and I tend to say, there's some people that are offering some pretty solid evidence about our part in this, and what we ought to be thinking about doing in order to be able to counteract what we seem to be a part of what is happening. Controversial subject. And so it's often said that science describes what's happening and religion describes what it means. Let me do that again. A big controversy about science and religion in our world. I don't think Paul was worried about that very much, but in our time it's something that people like me have to think about. And that is that science tends to be descriptive about what is happening and why it's happening, and religion has got to do with what it all means anyway. So there's not a conflict necessarily between science and religion. They're just looking at the world from different eyes and for different kinds of reasons. And that's why the difference is. The meaning that religion gives to the science of creation is that creation is something that was created beyond ourselves, and not by ourselves, but created for ourselves. And if you look carefully at the oration that Paul makes of the Areopagus, he says that God is the creator. And if God is the creator and we are worshipers of God, then we've got something to do in terms of understanding how his creation works and what our best part in that creation might be. And that vision fits right into what Paul's sermon was about, because Paul is representing the Christ. It calls humanity to be able to think differently and think creatively, and the church tends to act for Christ in the world. The church tends to act for Christ in the world. So if we are a part of this climate change, what does the church have to do with working on a solution to it and helping things in creation to work better? And so this is the sacred part of what Paul was talking about. And of course the controversy centers around something which is called the Paris Climate Accord, which a lot of people have signed on to, and we're still debating that in our own country. And the question is what we should do with this accord, since it says we have something to do with the problem. It's up to you to think about that. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to share two stories about Rogation Day celebrations that I personally made part of in my own life. This is the third one right here. I've never blessed dirt and had little plants. most contentious people in that congregation was a man named Jim Harrow. Now, when I got there, Jim Harrow had been there from the beginning, and he knew it all, and he was in charge. I was supposed to know that. And so, this worked out to find it. And Jim came up to me the very first Sunday and shook his hand and said, "I want to introduce myself. I am the congregational curmudgeon." I am the congregational curmudgeon, and I care about what happens in this place. And I said, "Yes, sir, I'm glad to hear that." Threw a pinch of snuff on his altar. And about two years later, and you should also know, if you've never been to St. Jude's, it's in a big apricot orchard. And we value that apricot orchard very, very highly, because it's a part of the creation that is given for that congregation to care for and about directly. They plow it, they trim it. Each one of those trees is adopted by a member of the congregation. They collect the fruit or give it to their friends. And so creation and the theology of creation works well with that environment in which St. Jude's is set. Jim Harrow came up and said, "John,